You're listening to BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon, it's The Bigger Picture, and I'm Mira Sivisodi, and we are on our second show to understand our constitution better with the Malaysian Bar Council, and to tackle the what constitutional institutions and the separation of powers are. With us is Maha Balakrishnan, Co-Deputy Chairperson, Constitutional Law Committee of the Bar Council. Welcome to the show, Maha.
Hi, Mira. Thanks for having me.
No worries at all. Tweets are going crazy again. Every last week, we had Edmund Bonn on, and the tweets were going crazy. Now, before we dive into today's show, last week, Edmund did speak to us about the objectives of the My Consti campaign. But based on your work that you've done so far, what are some of the misconceptions of this initiative?
Well, I must say there have been very, very few misconceptions. But one that has come to fore recently is the perception by some people that perhaps this campaign promotes certain views or certain positions on the Constitution. We don't do this. What we do is to set out in very simple language what the Constitution says. And there's a reason why we do this. Sometimes with some controversial constitutional issues, you'll get political parties debating two different positions on an issue. And it's hard for a Malaysian to understand or to know what to accept or to understand the background behind the debate. And this is where we come in. Through our Rakyat Guides, our booklets, we tell you in simple language what the Constitution says on 9 key aspects of the Constitution. Armed with this knowledge, every Malaysian will be in a better position to understand the debates that go on.
Okay, great. Now, today we're going to be talking about constitutional institutions and the separation of powers. Now, what is a constitutional institution?
Well, first, let's look at what's a constitution. A constitution is essentially a binding legal document that sets out how a country is going to be governed. And how a country is governed is, of course, through its institutions. So a constitution will create certain institutions that are necessary for the governance of the country. And it vests with these institutions the powers necessary to govern the country.
So which are the three? We have three constitutional institutions.
Well, actually, we have more than three constitutional institutions, but there are three key institutions, and they are the parliament or the legislative, the executive, which most people know as the government, as well as the judiciary, which is, of course, the courts. And what the constitution does is it vests the power to make laws with parliament. Then the executive is given the power to run the country according to those laws. And finally, the judiciary is given the power to decide what laws mean and also to order anyone, including the government and parliament, to obey the law.
Okay. What's so special about these three institutions as compared to, you mentioned there are others, what are some of the others?
Well, some of the other institutions created by the Constitution would be the Office of the Attorney General, the Elections Commission, the Public Services Commission, the Judicial and Legal Service Commission, the Police Force, and the Education Service Commission. Each of these commissions take care of their respective subject matter. So the Public Services Commission, for example, will oversee the appointment of public servants. Similarly with the Judicial and Legal Service Commission and the Police Force Commission and the Education Service Commission.
Okay. So is one constitutional institution more important than the other?
No. Each constitutional institution plays a distinct and independent role under the Constitution, and they are all important.
Okay. How has Parliament ever amended the Constitution to remove power from constitutional institutions?
Yes, it has. There was a very controversial amendment in 1988. This amendment essentially limited the judicial power of the courts. I should give you a little bit of background on this. Before the amendment in March 1988, the court's power was unlimited and came directly from the Constitution. What this meant was that the courts could actually examine and review all laws made by Parliament. After the 1988 amendment, what Parliament essentially did was to remove this overriding judicial power that the courts had and to replace it instead with parliamentary given power. So in other words, Parliament got to decide and say what the courts could and couldn't do, what laws they could and could not review.
Okay. So what has been the effect of that?
That's an interesting question, and legal geeks debate this all the time. Well, it's two things. There are two things that we need to remember. Firstly, Parliament, as we've said, can make laws, mm-hmm. Even to amend the Constitution. But the power to decide what that law means, even an amendment to the Constitution, still rests with the courts. And the courts have actually looked at the 1988 amendment before. And we have two interesting decisions on this. There was one case before the Court of Appeal, where the Court of Appeal said that Parliament cannot simply abolish the judicial power that the courts had. They said this because judicial power is integral to the basic structure of the Constitution. Judicial power, if you will, is like a repository. You have a repository of judicial power, and it needs to rest with one body or other in this country. So the Court of Appeal's view was that you can't abolish this from the Constitution and replace it with power that is vested only through Parliament. Unfortunately, that decision of the Court of Appeal, that part of the decision, has been overturned by the Federal Court. So at the moment, I'd say that the issue of the effect of the 1988 amendments is still not clear.
Okay. This is where, I suppose, the separation of powers comes into play.
Yes.
Okay. What do you mean by separation of powers? Sounds pretty basic, but I'm sure there's a much deeper story to it.
All right. The doctrine of separation of powers is actually something that is essential to most democracies. The idea behind it is to separate the powers that you need to run a country within different bodies, and not to vest it with just one body. I think it's quite obvious what the rationale is for this. Simply put, power corrupts, absolute power corrupts, absolutely. It's as simple as that. What normally happens in a democracy, as in Malaysia, is that the powers to govern are divided between three distinct bodies, as in our case, Parliament, the Executive, and the Judiciary. So the powers that have been divided are the power to legislate, or legislative power, power to govern, executive power, and of course, judicial power. Tied to the doctrine of separation of powers is the concept of checks and balances. This takes the prevention of abuse of power one step further. Over and above separating these essential powers, each of the key institutions is actually vested with the power to check the use of power of another of the institutions.
Okay, so how do the three main constitutional institutions check each other's power under the separation of powers principle?
Let's look at the powers of government are checked by Parliament. The Dewan Rakyat in Parliament, which is the House of Representatives, is actually able to require the Prime Minister or any minister in Cabinet to appear before them and to explain any use of power that has occurred. And of course, if the Cabinet or if the Prime Minister has acted in a way that Parliament disagrees with significantly, then the Parliament can pass a vote of no confidence against the Prime Minister. In which case, of course, the Prime Minister and the Cabinet should resign. But the powers of government can also be checked by the courts. The courts do this by reviewing the actions of Parliament, of the government. And if those actions are against the Constitution or against the laws made by Parliament, then the courts can correct those actions. However, we should say that, again, because Parliament can make laws to limit the powers of the courts, Parliament can also make a law to prevent the courts from reviewing a particular government action.
And this was after the case in 1988. Okay.
But even before, they did try.
Yes. Okay. How are the powers of Parliament checked?
Again, the powers of Parliament are checked by the courts. What Parliament does, of course, is to pass laws. So what the courts can do is to see whether any laws passed by Parliament follow the Constitution or not. And if it doesn't, that law will be declared void and ineffective.
If you have just joined us, I am speaking to Maha Balakrishnan, the co-deputy chairperson, Constitutional Law Committee of the Bar Council, and we're talking about understanding our constitution better. Today we're discussing constitutional institutions and the separation of powers. If you have any questions, do SMS them to 016-201-9000. When we come back, we'll find out who checks the power of the courts on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
You're listening to BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
It's The Bigger Picture, and I'm Mira Sivasothi. With me this wet afternoon is Maha Balakrishnan, the co-deputy chairperson of the Constitutional Law Committee of the Bar Council Malaysia, and we are talking about constitutional institutions and the separation of powers. Now, we hadn't talked about how the powers of parliament are checked. Who checks the power of the courts?
The executive and parliament can both check the powers of the court to different degrees. The executive can recommend to the Yang di-Pertuan Agong that a tribunal be set up to decide if a particular judge has misconducted himself or herself. A tribunal like that is made up of other judges, and these judges can, after hearing the matter, make a recommendation to the Yang di-Pertuan Agong to dismiss the judge in question. So this is what the executive can do. Where the parliament is concerned, if at least a quarter of the total members of either the Dewan Rakyat or the Dewan Negara bring a motion to discuss the conduct of any particular judge, then that conduct can be debated in the House. With that, from that debate, if there are any resolutions passed, those resolutions can be forwarded to the government for further action. However, Parliament itself does not have any powers to take disciplinary action against a judge.
Why is it so important that the courts must be independent? I know the courts have to be independent, but why is it so important?
All right, let's look at two aspects. When we talk about the independence of the judiciary, you need to look at it from two different angles. Firstly, who appoints the judges? And secondly, what is their power? These two perspectives actually go in hand in deciding whether or not the judiciary is independent. Now, why does the judiciary need to be independent? Let's look at the structure of our government. We have the executive, we have parliament, and we have the judiciary. We also have what's called a Westminster system of government. So basically, you have parliament, and it is members of parliament who make up the executive. Therefore, there is arguably a lack of separation of powers, if you will, between parliament and the executive. If parliament is to act as an efficient and effective check against the abuse of powers of government, then ideally the government shouldn't be made up of members of parliament. So because of this, the judiciary plays a very important role, because the judiciary is, if you will, independent from both parliament and the government. But again, we come back to the question of, is the judiciary in fact independent? Because the judges are appointed essentially by the executive, by the prime minister, and the judicial powers, as we've seen, have been limited by the 1988 amendments, a lot of people argue that the judiciary cannot act as an effective means of checking the powers or any abuse of powers by either the government or by parliament.
Okay. Something doesn't sound quite right, but how can we, the layperson, make a difference to all of this? To some of us out there, it probably sounds very technical, you know, but how can we make a difference?
The Constitution talks very clearly about three distinct institutions, the ones that we've discussed today, but there is a fourth force that a lot of people talk about. The fourth force is actually the rakyat. There is a lot that you can do as a Malaysian. The most important thing, I'd say, is to understand the Constitution and to understand how your government is supposed to work. Once you understand that, then at least you are able to recognize if any abuses occur. A lot of people also talk about the fact that a Malaysian's ability to affect change is in his or her vote. But it doesn't stop there. It doesn't start and end there. Every Malaysian can take an active part in society. Every Malaysian can take an active part in how this government is run, and to ensure that it is run constitutionally, You can take part in the debates that occur. You can work through various organizations to push for change.
You also mentioned that there are other constitutional institutions. Would you like to briefly just go through them?
We've mentioned all these other institutions in our Rakyat guides. The first one I think we should focus on is the Yang di-Pertuan Agong. Now, the Yang di-Pertuan Agong, it comes from one of the 9 states in Malaysia that has sultans, and they are elected every 5 years. The YDPA has both executive and legislative functions and powers. The important thing to remember is that in exercising most of these functions, the YDPA must actually act on the advice of the Prime Minister or of Cabinet. And this means that he must follow the advice given by the Prime Minister and or by Cabinet. Examples of this include the appointment of Cabinet Ministers, the appointment of the Attorney General, the appointment of senators to the Dewan Negara. For some functions that the YDPA has under the Constitution, he has a margin of discretion, and he does not have to act on the advice of either the Prime Minister or Cabinet. An example of this would, of course, be the common one, which is the appointment of the Prime Minister. The Prime Minister must be a member of the Dewan Rakyat, who, in the YDPA's opinion, is likely to command the confidence of the majority of the members of the Dewan Rakyat.
Okay, while we're on the topic of the YDPA, yes, we have a question from a listener. How about the powers of the monarchy? How does the monarchy fit into the separation of powers doctrine?
The monarchy, well, all right, when we talk about the monarchy, we must separate the YDPA from the Conference of Rulers. We've actually discussed the powers of the YDPA as well as the Conference of Rulers in our 5th booklet, which is on the executive. They each have separate and distinct powers. However, I must say that in the Constitution, their powers are limited. The YDPA must, in most cases, act on the advice of the Prime Minister.
Okay. Do you want to go on? The other constitutional institutions?
Yes. The Office of the Attorney General is also an office that is created under the Constitution. The Attorney General has the power and discretion to start, to conduct, and to stop proceedings in the courts against any person. The AG, of course, is appointed by the YDPA, also on the advice of the Prime Minister, as I've said earlier. Apart from that, you have the Elections Commission. The Elections Commission runs the election process in Malaysia, and to do so, Parliament has given the EC various functions and powers. The members of the EC are actually appointed by the YDPA, and the YDPA does this after consulting the Conference of Rulers. There's a very important caveat in the Constitution. The Constitution says that in appointing the members of the EC, the YDPA must consider the importance of having an EC that enjoys public confidence. Apart from that, we have the Public Services Commission, which I've talked about briefly earlier, as well as the Judicial and Legal Services Commission. I'd like to mention something about the Judicial and Legal Services Commission. The Judicial and Legal Services Commission is responsible for appointment, promotion, transfer, and discipline of members of the Judicial and Legal Service. Now, this would actually include not just members of the Attorney General's chambers, but also magistrates and sessions court judges and registrars of the court. So in other words, the people who head up the lower courts, the subordinate courts, the magistrates' courts and the sessions courts, actually are members of the Judicial and Legal Services Commission. They are not part of the judiciary. The judiciary consists of judges of the High Court, the Court of Appeal and the Federal Court.
Okay. You have the Police Force Commission as well?
Yes. The Police Force Commission, again, is responsible for the appointment, promotion, transfer and discipline of members of the police force. And the chairman is the minister, at the moment, the Home Minister.
Where does the Royal Commission fall into all of this?
The Royal Commission actually is not a constitutional institution. The Royal Commission is an institution that's been set up by Parliament under the Commission of Inquiries Act. The constitutional institutions that are set up under the Constitution are very special because they are creatures of the Constitution. And it is not easy to remove them, to abolish their powers, because what you would need to do is to amend the Constitution, which is not an easy thing to do. A lot of other institutions that are very important to the running of this country, like your public utilities bodies or public service bodies, your SOCSO, EPF, these are all created through acts of Parliament. So Parliament passes a law which creates these bodies. So the Royal Commission is similarly a body that's created through an act of Parliament.
Okay, and the last one is the Education Service Commission.
Yes, the Education Service Commission is set up to be responsible for the appointments, promotion and transfer of teachers. The members of the commission are, again, appointed by the YDPA, but he does need to consider the advice of the Prime Minister as well as the Conference of Rulers.
Okay. Thank you very much for enlightening us about the constitutional institutions and the separation of powers. I definitely learned something this afternoon. That was Maha Balakrishnan, the co-deputy chairperson of the Constitutional Law Committee of the Malaysian Bar Council. Thank you. This is The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
BFM 89.9. The Business Station.